Isn't it wonderful, the snow? It's just falling and falling. And it's so quiet when it falls. And it covers everything. It's like a good period of zazen when we are able to truly be quiet. Things happen, moments occur, and yet everything is covered over. It's just a marvelous, marvelous thing for us to experience on this last day, on this what we call New Year's Eve. Snow covering everything, and right behind me, quince blossoms, just every day more and more. Incredible. Each one so different. Dogen wrote a poem. In Japan, I was very fortunate one year to go to Japan in the winter, January. And you know, these plum blossoms blossom then in the snow. So he wrote a poem called The First Phase of Midwinter. Old plum tree, bent and gnarled, all at once opens. One blossom, two blossoms, three, four, five blossoms, uncountable blossoms. Not proud of purity, not proud of fragrance. Spreading, becoming spring, blowing over grass and trees, balding the head of a patched-robed monk. Whirling, quickly changing into wild wind, stormy rain, falling like snow all over the earth. The old plum tree is boundless. The hard cold rubs against the nostrils. In a way, you could see this as also the first five lines of the Genjo Koan. He's making the same point in a different way. Old plum tree bent and gnarled. Our life, just as it is, not some abstract idea of a tree, but an actual tree that ages, that is gnarled, that has lived and has been scarred. An actual tree. And all at once opens one blossom, two blossoms, three, four, five blossoms, uncountable blossoms. Out of our winter, of our meditation periods, when there has been a sense of lack, of scarcity, of sadness, also out of that comes a blossom. We blossom. Our self blossoms, and as a community we blossom. Not proud of purity, not proud of fragrance. That reminds me of Sensei's trees that were not embarrassed, do not have leaves on them yesterday, that she spoke of so eloquently. Just as the trees are, just as we are. Not proud of our purity, not proud of our fragrance, not proud of our eloquence, not proud of anything, nor ashamed to not have leaves on us, we're the trees, not ashamed not to have whatever we think we ought to have in order to pass muster. So geez, just be like the quince blossoms. They break your heart, they're so beautiful. These blossoms in Dogen's poem become spring. He says, not proud of purity, not proud of fragrance, spreading, becoming spring. Can you see how you are becoming spring? Your spring? No matter what your opinion about your state of mind, quite apart from your opinion about how things are, you are becoming spring. Blowing over grasses, trees. We forget that we are constantly affecting everyone that we are around and who are at a distance from us, who are around the ones who are around us. We forget that we're blowing over all the grasses and trees, just like these marvelous plum blossoms. Balding the head of a patchwork monk, well, we grow old. Even the youngest of you, you're growing old. And that too is a beautiful thing. Whirling, quickly changing into a wild wind, a stormy rain. When we look back, you know, it's those hard times that gave us the courage, that gave us the moment of insight. This is what Dogen's pointing to. Even during the whirling wild wind and the stormy rain, like a plum blossom, we can be there, awake, in the moment. Falling snow all over the earth. The old plum tree is boundless. That sense of samadhi, that sense of oneness, that if you go for a walk, if you walk outside after lunch and look at the landscape and see the white over everything, it's like the quality of where we see for a moment, oh yeah, it's all one. Yeah, it's all one. And then Dogen ends it with this, the hard cold rubs against the nostrils. You'll see that too if you step outside. Just this. Not quite so extraordinary, rather ordinary. It's cold outside, your nose will run. So like that line, flowers falling in our attachment and weeds springing up amid our aversion, in our study text for this period. Our life is like that. Incredibly beautiful, but cold and my nose is running. The cold rubs against our nostrils. And so does our ambition, our envy, our shame, our desires, our aversion. It all rubs up against us. Our anger roils our guts. And yet, it is right there, in the midst of our envy and our ambition and our anger, in the midst of our samsara, that like the bird in the air and the fish in the water, we are in our element, and thus through this element we experience our awakening. That's the teaching of the Genjo Koan. A fish swims in the ocean, and no matter how far it swims, there's no end to the water. A bird flies in the sky, and no matter how far it flies, there is no end to the air. What is your element right now? However, the fish and the bird have never left their element. When their activity is large, their field is large. When their need is small, their field is small. Thus, each of them totally covers its full range, and each of them totally experiences its realm. If the bird leaves the air, it will die at once. If the fish leaves the water, it will die at once. And then he says, know that water is life and air is life. And he decodes the whole thing for us, if we're listening. Know that water is life and air is life. The bird is life and the fish is life. Life must be the bird and life must be the fish. You can go further. There is practice enlightenment, which encompasses limited and unlimited life. There's nothing left out, he keeps telling us. Our practice is right here, now. In 2 days from now, our practice will be right where we are, wherever that is, whatever we're doing. That is our practice enlightenment. It is not separate. As I said on the first day, we go on retreat in order to gather our strength and our courage and to clarify our insight so that we can re-enter our world more skillfully, caring for ourselves and others. Last night, Ryotan Sensei, are you used to that name yet? Ryotan Sensei received his Dharma transmission, and he is my third successor. My first, of course, is my partner in this whole criminal endeavor. Our strong lay sister, who never lets us get complacent or phony about our practice. Barbara Joshin O'Hara Sensei, who in yesterday's talk demonstrated qualities of a fine teacher. Honesty. humility. A mind that is not afraid to look in the dark corners in order to bring light to a self and other. Thank you. Now, my second Dharma successor also goes back to the early 80s when Sensei Joshin and I met. When Jules Schuzen Harris, Sensei, and I were brother, Dharma brother and sister. And our times changed, our locations changed. And he spent many years studying under another teacher in the White Plum Sangha. And about 5 years ago, we renewed our relationship, and this time as a student and teacher. And we worked together, although he lived at a distance. He lives in Philadelphia. And last year at this session, he received Dharma transmission. As far as we know, Shuzen Sensei is the first black man to receive the Zen transmission, of which we are very proud. And now we have three. Ryotan Sensei has studied with me for 20 years. He is a clear light of the Dharma. A little salty, really. Self-deprecating. Forceful and upright. His dharma is very subtle. Like Sensei Joshin, he has a fine writerly quality, an uncompromising and genuine appreciation of words and their use, their skillful use. I'm very proud of you, Ryota. He is a strong voice for the Dharma. Like Joshin and Shuzen Sensei, above all, he's the real thing. And there's nothing more that we can ask. For me, it's very, very important that we not be fooled by imitation dharma. I think we're at a crucial time of dharma in the West, and there's a lot of weeds amid the flowers. As I say over and over again, it's really easy to imitate the dharma. It's really easy to be likable and engaging and be really superficial and without an understanding. And that's not harmful as long as you're not leading other people down the same path. It is a difficult, difficult journey. So much of the work must be done internally. Years of zazen, years of meeting oneself and following one's mind around and around and around the zendo, of learning humility, of realizing that there is nothing to teach, that you have nothing to give. As long as you think you have something to give, you've missed it. our own Zendo is at a time of a kind of important time for us, because it is so important to do Zen training, and yet, you know, people just want to kind of fall by a nice community center and feel good, and are not quite willing to go the extra step that's required for true Zen training. And so that's why we have these intensive periods where we try to pull out something really crucial to our understanding and say, let's look at that, let's focus on that. And I asked the Shuso, the head trainee, each time to create a commitment form for all of us that will be like a series of pointers that will help us to see some ways that we can train ourselves in the way that we would be trained if we all lived together all the time in a monastery. So we learn to train ourselves by using these commitments forms. And it helps us to see how we want to turn our practice, which direction we want to turn in. And this year, Joan Shuso has emphasized self-care. Self-care in the sense of deep self-inquiry. A study of ourself to see how we can best care, how we can best take care of ourself as one of these blossoms, and thus take care of all those whom we encounter. How can we serve the world if we are not taking care of what's right here, our own body and mind? Dogen talked about a quality of mind that is necessary for bodhisattva, Roshin, parental mind, the mind of a parent. To take care of ourselves in a parental way, to care for ourselves in that way, of our bodies, of our minds, of our behavior. There's a poem that illustrates this well, and I'm so sorry that Sister Joanne isn't here, because this is a poem she wrote quite a few years ago. It's in haiku style. Pregnant robin protecting new life hops with one eye looking behind. Pregnant robin protecting new life hops with one eye looking behind. The careful attention of a robin. Can you be a robin for a moment? Just be on the lawn there. And, you know, there's a little insect there. We won't go into the saving lives right now. There's a little insect right there. And yet, you want to be careful the cat isn't here. And so you've got one eye there and one eye there, protecting the life that's not yet born. It's a lovely, lovely image. How to protect ourselves in such a way, like a mother robin hopping along. One way that we do here is a series of rituals on New Year's Eve that help us to let go of what we want to let go of and to turn in the direction that we want to turn. There are parts of our, everyone has alluded to them during the talks, Myoko and then Shinryo and Joshin Sensei alluded to aspects of ourselves, old stories or old parts of ourselves that we, once we recognize, we don't really need to keep dragging around. They're no longer useful to us. Protecting ourselves, for example. Once we see what that fear is, then the action of protection is no longer so necessary in that way. So I wonder for each of us what it is that we'd like to have fade away. What old story we could let go of. Some old way of reacting, or some old belief, or goal, or habit that we don't need anymore. Do we still think we need something like praise, a certain person, a certain object? Or have we changed? And is that just an old story we're dragging around? What is it in us that's ready to fade away? That we're ready to let go of? That will free us to head in a different direction? It's like being able to let go of the idiot on our shoulder that Sensei talked about yesterday. So that we can really even discover the path that we haven't taken, that we want to take. I said to Sensei, I've been having this recurrent dream lately, there's some kind of an emergency going on, and I have to bring what's important with me. Like an emergency bag you're supposed to have if you live in Manhattan with your passport in there, and $100 bills. My son told me this. This is what I'm supposed to have, $100 bills and a passport. You can grab it any moment. But it's clearly that there's part of my consciousness that wants to separate out what's really important in my life and let go of stuff that isn't. And so, you know, at least that's how I'm interpreting the dream today. What do I want to let go of? What needs to fall away? What wants to grow in its place? What needs the room for something new to grow? So for the next few hours, I'd like you to consider that. What ways of being are no longer useful for you? What parts of your life no longer work? And it's time to let go of. You don't have to be angry or judgmental. You could just let them go. So we have a ceremony for this. I encourage you to, when we leave today, some slips of paper on the back, and you can take some of those slips of paper, and on them write what it is you'd like to let go of. So consider what that might be. We'll do that after the noon chant. And later in the day, when we come back at 3:15 for Zazen, we'll have the big bell will be placed by the door, and you can put the slips of paper in the bell. Okay, and then we're going to have an atonement ceremony where we'll atone for all evil karma ever committed by all beings everywhere. We'll just take on the whole thing that we are, but we forget. So we think they did it. But actually, we did it. So, and after the atonement ceremony, we will have a chance to hear what people have let go of. The Shuso will just take note of all the things that people have let go of in a list, and we'll be able to hear that. It's something that Sensei suggested that I think is very healing. To hear what all of us are letting go of. And then we'll ritually burn the paper. And what that is going to do is that's going to open up space for us to consider what might arise as a vow in terms of the future direction of our life. Later in the evening, when we, after we've had satsas in and done some sharing, there'll be an opportunity for each one of us to go up and ring the great bell. And the recommendation is when you go up to ring the great bell, we'll all be in a line, we'll all be chanting, no one's going to be looking at you, no one's going to be able to hear how you ring the bell, so let that part go. And you're just going to walk up, and at the moment that you take the striker of the bell, just in that moment, consider a vow or a promise to yourself about a direction that you'd like to go, and then ring the bell. And just trust that that's going to arise out of the work that we are doing today. The zazen, the considering of throwing away what we could call like old leaves, leaves that are stuck on the tree but they're not nurturing us anymore, they're dead, they're just hanging there. Consider that, and then we'll have the vows. Probably talked enough, huh? So during the atonement ceremony, I urge you to really allow yourself to simply bow when it's time to bow and chant when it's time to chant. And allow yourself to partake of this ceremony in all its richness. Through our vows and through our atonement, we become more alive. We become like the plum tree in Dogen's poem, or like the quince tree that Marc Antoine brought us, that is continually blossoming out of that old, bent and gnarled tree. Continually blossoming. Let me share the poem with you one more time. Plum tree bent and gnarled, all at once opens one blossom, two blossoms, three, four, five blossoms, uncountable blossoms. Not proud of purity, not proud of fragrance, spreading, becoming spring, blowing over grass and trees, balding the head of a patch-robed monk, whirling, quickly changing into wild wind, stormy rain, falling like snow all over the earth. The old plum tree is boundless. The hard cold rubs against the nostrils.